Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We're online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. It's that time again. It's a time we talk about the most viewed, most emailed, most blogged, most read, most mosted stories on the internet. Someone came up with a good idea to call this segment The Most. Ian.
Yes.
Good morning. What do you have to say for yourself this
Present.
Morning?
I brought in a most popular from the Capital Times, Madison, Wisconsin, which is also the brat capital of the world.
Is it?
Yes.
What? What are you talking about? The brat capital isn't in Germany?
According to Madison, Madison is the brat capital of the world.
They would know.
I thought you maybe you'd argue for Milwaukee.
The state of Wisconsin is clearly America's brat capital.
Yes.
We can agree on that.
Okay, well, Madison holds what's called the world's largest brat fest, and there was a record of 189,432 bratwursts sold in 2004. With about an hour to go in this year's brat fest, they were 10,000 short. They weren't going to break the record. So they got on the PA. They're like, look, we need everybody to buy one more sausage.
If you are within the sound of my voice...
And they did. They,
They did it. They went over the mark in a big way. 191,712 brats sold in just over 4 days. Now, interesting thing, Jim and Veronica Kleckner, they bought the winning brat, the last brat sold in 2004, the 189,432nd brat. This year, they bought the one that went over the mark, and they went home and they put it in their freezer where the other one still resides. These are, you know, they're sentimental about these brats.
Is that really so. Just by chance, do we know, or do they, like, were they like,
I don't know. I don't know if they're gaming the brat fest
right.
or what.
Sentimental would be one word. Fetishistic would be another.
Let's not split hairs.
Anyway, I just want to say that's about 99.8 brats per minute sold. And the other thing is, hot dogs are also sold at the brat fest. They don't count, but soy brats do count towards the record, and I think
who
there's been some controversy
rules?
About
yeah,
that.
Soy brats.
Yeah. I disagree. Dan?
Let's not even get started on that.
Do you want to pivot off the brats onto something else?
Yeah, sure. I've got a most email here from Yahoo News, and I just want to start by asking you guys, what's more ridiculous than making a cat the station master of a railroad station?
Nothing.
What? I can't think.
Giving it a promotion. All
right? You're right. That is more ridiculous.
Tama, the tortoiseshell colored creature born and raised at Kishi Station in Japan on the provincial Kishigawa line, has gotten promoted from station master to super station master. So congratulations to Tama. This cat is a birthed from a stray cat that lived near the railroad station. Because of cutbacks on the Wakayama Electric Railway a couple years ago, they had to get rid of the station master, and they named the cat the station master.
Uh-huh.
So it's a there's no station master at this station other than this cat.
Apparently,
and
the cat aces the civil service.
So cats work for a lower wage.
Yeah,
that's right.
Tama
is so popular that he got promoted to super station master. He works just for food, so a lot cheaper. Or she, I should say, it's a female cat. And apparently, according to her supervisor, she declines to relieve herself when passengers are looking. And the station master is set to appear in a French documentary film about wonder cats from around the world, which we are definitely going to do a segment about.
We have to get the YouTube video of the cat just pawing the people into the packed cars. Meow, meow, get off. Oh, it's that adorable cat. Okay, push
right.
me. Trisha.
Hey there, you guys.
Hey there.
I have one of the most emailed stories on MSNBC. And I thought, what? This is from 2005. It's a story about the $100 laptop that was designed for the children of the world. It's also called the XO laptop from the One Laptop Per Child Foundation. And, you know, it didn't really meet its target price of $100 per laptop. And that's been out for a while. We've talked about it a few times on this show. So I'm thinking, why on earth is this in the most emailed list now?
But that's the sort of thing that you would just let simmer and not want to answer if I know you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, well,
I just
really
let it go. I just let it go.
Yeah.
No, I'm like a dog with a bone. I had actually gotten tipped off last week about this from someone at Laptop Magazine. Yes, there is a Laptop Magazine.
And you read it?
Only when they send me a press release.
Okay.
But the One Laptop Per Child organization has announced the next generation of the One Laptop Per Child, the XO2. And now we know Josh here, one of our engineers, he has the XO laptop, the first version. We were all marveling over it. It's tiny. It's made for little kids' hands. It's amazing.
Or
well,
Josh
the second
is
one is supposed to be only half the size of that first one. And the design is going to be, it's on a hinge, so you can open it up, and it has two touch screens. Mm-hmm. So you can read it like a book, or you can both, you can do it with two people. One person can have one half, and the other person can have the other. You can put a, one of the screens can turn into a keyboard, et cetera, et cetera. So it sounds pretty cool. They're hoping this thing will be $75 a piece when it comes out in 2010. But of course, there are already debunkers. Somebody at CNET got a look at the advanced material and said, you know, I just don't see how they're going to do it. So, we'll
okay, I'm going to go really quick. This is one of the most emailed at CNN.com. The Canadian foreign minister has been forced to resign. Why? Because he left some very secret documents out where he wasn't supposed to. And the...
Which is to say out.
Yeah. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper says, in case you're wondering, his forced resignation has nothing to do with the fact that this man's former girlfriend has connections with Hell's Angels, those nefarious characters, and the mob. That's why he didn't get fired.
There you are.
There you are.
You know you hired a good foreign minister when he has like six different reasons for getting fired. You can just choose one. All right, Matt, why don't you take us to a mostest piece?
I will take you to a mostest piece. It's one of the most emailed stories at NPR.org right now, and it's all about this sound.
Is that the drilling beneath us?
That is a mosquito. That is a mosquito. What? I was actually bit by a mosquito this weekend. Look at this.
It's hideous!
Look at that.
Put it away! Yeah.
Isn't that gross?
You know, I kind of like the first mosquito bite of the year.
These three right here. And then one on this side. I was down in Washington, and as we all know, Washington is a swamp. Yeah. And there are lots of mosquitoes there. Anyway, so Memorial Day, unofficial start of summer, warm days, ice cream, swimming pools, and mosquitoes. Now, they stay away if you spray on DEET.
Yeah.
Right? It's been pretty much the gold standard for repellents for like 50 years, but it's smelly, it's oily, you can't really go to sleep when it's on you. I can't anyway. Scientists looking for alternatives, and NPR's Nell Greenfield-Boyce says that they found some promising new chemicals.
When I first called Ulrich Bernier, he couldn't talk because he was too busy being bitten by mosquitoes. Later on, I asked him how many mosquito bites he had.
I probably have on the order of 300 to 400 on my left arm.
He's used to it, though. He's a chemist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Florida who tests insect repellents.
The test that we do involves a cage of mosquitoes, and in that cage we have 500 female mosquitoes.
Bernier routinely sticks his arm in there, but not his bare arm. He's tightly covered up, except for one small window of inviting flesh. That little window is protected by a thin cloth that the mosquitoes can bite right through. In tests, the cloth gets coated with candidate repellents.
If the mosquitoes fly away, then we know it's repellent. If they land on the cloth and walk around, we know we're at the threshold level of repellency.
And when they start biting, the repellent is failing. Bernier recently used this test to look at some interesting new chemicals. They came from researchers at the University of Florida. The scientists had systematically searched through a long list of possible repellents tested over the last 50 years. It turned out that some of the best belonged to one class of chemicals. By carefully analyzing this class of chemicals, they came up with some clues that would let them synthesize some new repellents that they thought would work.
I was surprised to see just how good these things were.
Bernier found that in his tests, some of the compounds repelled insect attack way longer than DEET. If you put DEET on a cloth, it works for only around 17 days. Some of the new compounds lasted over three times as long, up to 73 days.
After trying so many different repellents that people have submitted over the years, it was nice to see some that actually were better than DEET.
And he likes something else, too. In the past, most repellents were discovered just by testing random chemicals, not by designing them.
The biggest implication from this particular study is that we were able to actually predict repellency based on models, synthesize compounds, test them in the laboratory, and get good agreements.
The results are reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
Any efforts to use any approach to improve on DEET should be commended.
Leslie Vosshall is a scientist at the Rockefeller University in New York, who's also on a mission to beat DEET. She just recently discovered how DEET works its magic on bugs, something that's long been a mystery. She found that DEET blocks the action of odor receptors.
Which means that when you're spraying DEET on your skin or your clothes, you create a little microenvironment of this chemical that when an insect approaches makes them blind to odors.
And if mosquitoes are blind to your odor, then to them, it's like you're invisible. Vossehall is now trying to find other chemicals that block these odor receptors. Because her lab's working with cells and proteins rather than mosquitoes and people, she can quickly and cheaply screen massive numbers of chemicals, hundreds of thousands.
And we're finding lots of interesting things that look nothing like DEET, that are much more potent, at least in the lab.
But the big question is how they'll work if they're smeared on people's skin. There's a lot more testing to do before any of these repellents could show up in your bug spray.
And that's NPR's Nell Greenfield Boyce. Did you find yourself doing this during that interview?
A little bit.
You can find the link to that story and all the stories you heard on themostnpr.org/Brian Park.